inspired advices mostly are directed towards creditors' countries. So it's up to you to answer now.
It's not up to an Australian to answer about being a creditor country these days. We also have some distinguished bankers in the audience, and who it's probably some of it's their money that we're talking about. So I'm more obviously a bit diffident giving an answer. Actually, I'm very optimistic. I think the history of the world has been that things tend to get done in a human and sympathetic way. And whilst for the debtor nations it might not seem to be happening quickly enough, I do believe and sense that creative ways will be found of achieving what can be conflicting objectives, and that is, on the one hand, reducing the desperate burden of debt servicing on some of the developing countries, whilst at the same time maintaining international standards for responsibility, in fact, standing by debts. Now, I really don't have the answer to what will happen, but as I say, I if you look in history, that in spite of the fact that we tear ourselves to bits every 25 or 50 years, we also display astonishing humanity. And I believe that these problems will be addressed, and I am hopeful that a creative solution will be found to the two apparently conflicting objectives. As I say, I'd hate to go further with all these bankers in the audience, Mr. Chairman.
Would Mr. Ralph care to share his views with us on this?
Well, I'm glad Mr. Healy pointed out that Australia's debt is about twice that of Indonesia's, so we have an even bigger problem. But really what it comes down to is the use to which debt is put. Essentially what it means is that if a country is building up debt which it doesn't have the prospect of repaying fairly comfortably, it means that the funds that are being borrowed are not being used wisely in terms of investment. In Australia's case, of course, what we're doing is we are funding the consumption, funding living standards beyond our own ability to produce, and the day of reckoning will come. Now, Australia's percentage of exports is not quite as high, the percentage of exports that's needed to service external debt is not quite as high as Indonesia's because of the size of our exports, but we're getting up towards that same percentage. And I think I'd support what Brian Healy said. It's really, we really need to get our objectives straight, and that is that for a country to advance its standard of living, it needs to create an environment. Words are easy and doing it's a lot harder, but it needs to create an environment that's going to encourage investment that will generate surpluses, and then it needs to have in place an environment and systems that will ensure that the people generally will benefit from the fruits of that investment. In other words, there are the two aspects that both of which need to be focused upon. Firstly, the creation of wealth, and you need to have in place, people are human, they will respond to the right sort of incentives. Behaviour will be conditioned by what the rules are. So you need to have in place something that will generate wealth, and also have in place a means of then making sure that that wealth is distributed equitably. In other words, that there is an efficient taxing system, that there is an efficient government spending, that there isn't waste, and that when funds are taken in from the savings of other countries, the citizens of other countries, that those savings are invested to earn a return. Any foreign investment that comes in and generates a return must have a benefit both to those who invest and the community in which the investment is made, if you have in place both those different aspects, the environment that will generate the wealth-creating activity in the first place, and if you have in place the distribution means of getting, of ensuring that the various stakeholders in enterprises, that is the shareholders, the employees, and the community, and the governments, all are getting a reasonable proportion that will cause investors to reinvest and will cause governments to do the right thing by their citizens.
Thank you. You know, one of the cardinal rules for a chairman is he's not supposed to be involved in the discussion.
Yeah.
And I will follow that. However, he's allowed to share information. I just wanted to share information that in the last interim committee meeting and development committee meetings held recently in Washington, and in the summary of the communique that came out, it was clear that insofar as the group of 24 and developing countries were concerned, they still, as very much expressed by Frank Seda, are quite not satisfied with the options so far that have been brought up, and they continue to say that the Baker approach is not adequate. Of course, in the case of the group of seven and the industrialized countries, their position has been summarized by Mr. Ralph, that growth is the answer, that we need to continue to explore the different options that will allow developing countries over time and creditor countries over time to try to find a mix that will work itself into some solutions. Therefore, in brief, there's not yet been a clear formula that has been agreed to between developing countries and the industrialized countries. Next question, please. Yes. This lady here first.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to direct my question to Mr. Healy. As a developing country representative, we fully understand the role of multinational company in our part of the world, and we really appreciate the multinational investment, and needless to say that we need the investment pretty badly. But what I disagree a little bit with Mr. Healy is that, yes, we agree that you bring in technology, you bring in foreign investment, and you bring in the management skill and all of that. And you also look after your workers and improve the quality of life of the workers where you are involved directly. And you expect that the country and you will channel your contribution through the government and taxation channel. But in the developing countries, sometimes it doesn't work out so well that way in the direct taxation through the government. That's why we have a lot of non-government organization. And what we are here in this Congress, for what I understand, it's a little bit beyond the responsibility of the normal government role. We are here actually to try to go deeper to help the poor people in a mass way. Actually, what shall I say in English? It's just to go out of our way, our normal way, to help the underprivileged people. So my question is that the multinational companies, are they willing to join us into this type of movement or whatever you call it? So because what are you doing or what are you saying is what the company or private company are doing also. We do look after our workers, we do pay our tax, and we do exactly the same as normal multinational company, but in a smaller way because we don't have that fantastic profit. Therefore, if we're going to achieve what we are here for, we should be in the same harmony from the multinational company as well as the local private companies. Thank you.
Mr. Healy, please.
Well, I certainly could not disagree at all with the basic thrust behind your question, and I would feel that I've done less than justice to my own company if I left you with the feeling that that we don't think we have a responsibility beyond the sole profit motive. In fact, as a corporation, we have a declared policy of spending 2% of our pre-tax profit on community activities. This is a standard worldwide practice, which, given the size of Sara Lee Corporation's profit, represents a significant amount of money. Time didn't permit me. In fact, originally, when I was preparing my presentation for this morning, I first had a list of all the good things that we do in Asia outside invest, and that's in terms of how we sponsor the blind, and we have particular things in different countries. But I then chose not to do that, not because we don't do it, but because I felt it was perhaps more important, and I hope that wasn't too pompous of me, to put what I felt were some fundamental issues to this group. My answer to your question is, yes, I do believe we have to do more. I believe that as a company, and I don't think we are rare, and we're certainly not unique, and we're not rare in multinational terms, that we, generally speaking, have a greater sense of responsibility for the communities in which we operate than often do local employers. And I'm not just talking about Asian countries now, I'm talking about countries throughout the world. I think we've always set the highest possible standards. And as I say, and it's not just words, in our company we have four management goals, three of which are directly related to profit and growth goals, and one is directed to public responsibility. And each of our managers around the world are assessed on the contribution that they in fact make to the community in which they live and work. I mean, we encourage, for instance, people to join charitable organizations. We encourage our people to be involved in politics. In fact, we go to the extent of giving them life, we give them insurance cover for activities that they are involved in outside work, which is involved in community affairs. Now, I don't want to give you the idea. I still believe, and I don't resile from the fact that I think the greatest benefit to flow from investment is in fact wealth creation, and that comes from profit. But we do have a social responsibility, and as I say, if time allowed, and I'm more than happy, in fact we've got with us this morning our manager for Asia, and he can tell you over lunch if you wish, you know, the sort of things we do outside the workplace. So I wouldn't like you to be left with the thought that all we think about is the bottom line.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Yes, Deborah Smith from Acclimatize Consulting. First a comment and then a question. The fact that we're all able here to speak English to each other instead of Tagalog or Hindi or Japanese or Spanish or whatever certainly means that our Asian friends understand the way our minds work and our culture much better than we have been able to appreciate them, and I thank them for that they've taken the trouble to learn English. I appreciate that very much. My question is, Mr. Seda, I think perhaps you might have an interesting thought on this. I'm very interested in the managers who are sent from Australia to work in Asia. That is mainly what my business does. And I would like to know, I think it's vitally important that we send people who are interested in the human face of management when they go to these countries and are not, do see themselves as ambassadors of a sort, which I truly feel they are, representing their country and looking far beyond the bottom line. So I would like to know, if you had your wish, or what do you think in general, Asian managers, what kind of expatriates, what kind of Australians or American or whatever managers would they like to have and come work with you? What are the characteristics that you would like to see them have? Because it's what I try to do, and I'd like to know if what I'm teaching and trying to encourage goes along with what, from an Asian perspective, would be seen as what you'd like for our year 2000 managers to have as expatriates when they come to work with you.
You're addressing the question
to Mr. Seda, please.
Dr. Seda.
Yes, Dr. Seda.
Thank you. First, they should be professionals. Second, you should be good Australians. Third, they should have what I call social engagement, and to look at the business as an agent of development, not only as a profit center, although you can only develop by profit, but don't reduce the business only to a profit center, but to be an agent of development of that country, not of development of Australia, but agent of development of the country where you are working. And I think then you are safe.
Thank you. Next question, please. Incidentally, we have more time. Senator Button is going to be a bit late, so we will not adjourn, as I originally mentioned, at 12:25. We can go a little bit over. So, yes, we have more time for questions. Yes.
I'm Red from Thailand. Just a comment and a small question. First, I'd like to congratulate two organizations for having successfully shifted the blame for third world debt to the private sector and the church. And those two successful organizations are the banks and the government, because it is their bad judgment which led to the high degree of world debt right now. You should blame the government and the banks. The small question is directed to Dr. Seda and also to a future speaker. We're talking about human development. And from what I can see, the most important factor of human development is for a person to have a job. And second, if he can afford it, he should have education. I think in the Asian context, probably having a job and having education is probably the most important for human development. So far, I haven't heard much comment about it. I hope future speakers will touch upon them. And the other question is, I'd like Dr. Seda to expand a little bit on the learning organization. That's a very important concept. Thank you.
Dr. Seda, please.
Thank you very much. I think you are right. The fundamentals for human development in our conditions, Asian conditions, is job and education. As I have said somewhere, that we are, I don't know Thailand, but Indonesia, we say our exports is increasing because we have a comparative advantage of low salaries of labor. It is not true, I think, because low salary but low productivity, then you are in the same circle, infinite circle. So that means that we need work and we need skilled labor. I agree with you. And that should be the path of our human development in our region. It is for government and private business to supply work, to supply jobs, and it is also the task of governments and business to educate the working force to get more productivity. And we should then, all other, and also multinationals, they should give our the chance to increase educational and training in their companies for our people to have to increase their ability. So there's no doubt about that. And second, your question was about our learning organizations. I mean, you know, we are a developing country, so our organizations should not behave themselves as established organizations as they are developing in this, in well-established in Western countries. We have an say in Indonesia, you are diving and also drinking the water. So you are developing, but by developing, you are expanding your vision. So I think this is the big problem of our Asians, is the businessmen are that we are very quick to follow the way of thinking of the industrialized businessman. We forget that we are still developing. We have still to learn. So don't be satisfied with what you have reached at one stage, but always try to develop, because by developing our business, by developing ourselves, we contribute in the developing of the country. So that is actually the base fundamentals of what I say, the learning organization. The organization should be always open for learning from experiences from other people, but also your own experience in the past. And then you are, again, I use the word agent of development of your country. So, thank you.
Thank you. I think many individuals share your views that both banks and governments must share in the responsibility and in the burden. Next question, please.
Yes. My name is Maximo Calao from the Philippines, the Philippine Institute of Alternative Futures. I'd just like to make a comment and address this to Mr. Holly there. The impression I'm getting is that we are focusing on the wealth creation, the positive wealth creation of business as part of a solution for the Asian problem. But I don't think we are focusing enough on business as also part of the problem. My feeling is that wealth creation of foreign investment is not inherently good. There are some kind of foreign investments that are exploitive in nature and creates wealth for a few for a shorter time period. For example, the exploitation of natural resources, timber mining as such. And as a learning community, I'd like to, again, taking off from Mr. Sada's thing, that the process of looking or the process of development is basically more important in terms of how we earn wealth than how we spend it. Having dividing income is only an afterthought. The process of real development is how we create that wealth. And I wish more focus would be along that line that business is also part of the problem as well as part of the solution.
To whom is your question, if any, addressed to?
Well, inherently, I guess, Mr. Holy, in the sense that his proposition is foreign investment is inherently good, which I disagree with.
Yeah, I suppose I did qualify slightly in saying that for all its faults, I don't think there is a perfect system. And I am sure individual countries, individual regions can find specific examples where foreign investment was exploitive. But I would certainly take issue and disagree strongly with the alternative proposition that because some small amounts of foreign investment is exploitive, foreign investment per se is bad. And I believe there was a view such in Asia in my time, and I believe that's one of the factors that in fact has held back the development of Asia. Again, as I tried to point out in my speech, we tend to think that foreign investment is in fact a second half of the 20th century phenomenon, but that is not true. I mean, foreign investment, as I pointed out, has been contributing to wealth creation for thousands of years. And certainly people in this room now are coming from countries where I believe will be defending, and in fact already are defending foreign investment. So, I mean, I'm really not quite sure how to respond other to say that I cannot agree with you that that foreign investment is inherently bad. I mean, my proposition is that it is intrinsically good, and certainly I do not believe. I think the idea of debating how we share out wealth and how we spread that wealth down into the community before that wealth is being created seems to me a very redundant question and issue, and I don't think we're serving the people that we want to help by debating those particular nuances. Sorry if that...
Thank you. We will allow a last question. Yes, please.
My name is Brian Sheehan from Australia. I'm one of the few people in the tertiary institutions in Australia, as far as I can see, at this conference, and I think that's a great pity, particularly that people in business and management education in Australia didn't attend in the numbers that I would have certainly hoped. I'd like to go to the quotation that Cardinal Sim used in his address: the primary form of wealth lies in the human mind. And I'm sure he would agree, and others, that the human mind needs to be developed, educated and trained. One of the things that worries me about tertiary education, again, perhaps particularly tertiary business and management education in Australia, and indeed I think in other areas as well, is you seem to very often have education over here and management and business over there, with perhaps a few lines in and out, but not the integration that I think would be desirable. I personally believe that Australia has a lot to offer in terms of assisting its Asian neighbours in areas of management, training and development, but I would like to see that being done on a much more integrated basis in cooperation with Australian and local businesses in the countries concerned. I'd be interested in Cardinal Sim's comments and on the other panel members, please.
Cardinal Sim. Well, after hearing so many comments, I would say that we are here to be able to change the attitudes of business, because this is the system of business since the very beginning, and it seems that it didn't work so well. So what are we for here in order that we can find and devise ways and means to be able to solve this gap between business and the poor people? Of course, there are businessmen who are very, very good, and that is why we are here, to be able to share this kind of approach that they have. I would like to tell you what somebody told me the other day. UNCTAD, United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, and they have been meeting for so many times, and he said to me, UNCTAD means under no circumstances take any decision.
Well, thank you. I hope we do come to a decision in this conference. With that, I'd like to ask Bob Nordlinger to thank all our speakers and give a vote and